In an interview earlier this month, the chief executive of Mantengu made some pretty hectic claims about Zunaid Moti, a South African entrepreneur who has his friends and his enemies, amongst them, well, friendly. I guess he's got Paul O'Sullivan enemies. Well, in business, you seem to pick those up no matter how successful or unsuccessful you are.
Cody from Paul has sold multiple vehicles to We Buy Cars. Suspicious?
I think so.
Is that a crime?
No. Where are you getting the cars?
I buy them and I sell them at the spot, like a normal person.
Okay.
No, man, I'm just an accounting student. I know a good deal when I see one.
That's Excel, meant. What's more stressful, tax season or selling a car at We Buy Cars?
Tax season, obviously.
We Buy Cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
Zunaid Moti is with us today, and nice to see you, Zunaid. You requested a right of reply. On the 13th of October, Mantengu's Mike Miller called forensic investigator Paul O'Sullivan a sellout, and he also alleged that he's part of what he termed your criminal enterprise. Now, those are hectic allegations, and maybe let's just start off with your relationship with Paul. Perhaps you could articulate that for us.
Sure. Alex, first, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the right to reply. You know, my relationship is quite simple with Paul. You know, he's an individual to himself. Nobody makes Paul's mind up. We give him a lot of work. He does good forensic work for us. We're happy with the type of work he does. But what he does as a business, as Paul O'Sullivan and Associates or whatever he's called now, we can't be responsible for it. If he's suing people and investigating people, etc., it's got really nothing to do with us. And I think it's just an opportunity for the media to drive the narrative that we have business transactions together. Not really have business transactions together. You know, in the past, we have bought properties together and I lent some money into an SPV and we did well. But we don't have any transactions together. He's not my partner. He's on his own. What he does is his own problem. You know, and that's where it is. I would like to... Yeah, sorry. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just one other point, and then obviously I'm very happy for you to give a statement or whatever you want to do. But Miller did claim that Paul O'Sullivan took money from you and took shares in an organization, and he did this to withdraw sworn affidavits. Apart from the fact that he called you a criminal enterprise, I mean, this is a very hectic allegation as well. So what's your side of that?
We're going to get to that right now. As I said to you, I invested some money with Paul in the form of a loan account in an SPV. He bought some properties, about 10 properties, and it was sold and some profits were made. And that's where it pretty much ended. And so far as the comment of his concern, that is very, very large. I was a bit taken back by someone I thought you would be a bit intelligent to not make a stupid comment like that. But it put me in a position where I needed to understand what is he about? What is his business about? Because I didn't know anything about this guy until he came onto the scene with a partner of mine, Danny, and I was trying to facilitate a settlement of some sort or the other of an impasse they had. And all of a sudden, bang, shoot, I'm in the middle of this arguments and so on. Never knew him. I just want to upfront tell you, I've never owned a Mantengu share. I don't really intend to own one. I've never traded in it directly or indirectly. And he's come onto the show without a shred of evidence that suggests that I owned a share or own a share in Mantengu in the first place. And there's a good reason for all of what he's doing. And I'm going to take you to it if you have the patience. But it's quite explosive. And through the course of the interview, you'll see who the criminal syndicate actually is. And you'll see how Miller runs a criminal syndicate with about 10 or 12 people in Mantengu and why he's doing what he's doing. So it starts off with the concept of a scapegoat. You see, he's looking for somebody or something to explain why this company, Mantengu, doesn't do well or is not doing well. Why its price of the shares are under pressure, why there is no enthusiasm of investors to come along and invest into it, or corporates or banks. Right now, there are no big institutions invested in there. There's nobody that's a significant shareholder or a serious shareholder. And I'm going to take you to the reason as to why I'm the scapegoat. So it starts off, Alec, in 2022. Miller starts a business, and just by the way, I don't know if you know Miller's background, but Miller is actually a game ranger. I don't know if you know that, but he's also a CA, And from what I'll discuss, I'll demonstrate one or two things to you that will be quite interesting. So he invests in a business called Langpine. It's a chrome operation somewhere in the northwestern province. And he wishes to reverse this into Mantengo, obviously. But prior to that, in 2017, he became a director of Mantengo, which was then called MRI, and it was listed on the Altax. And this particular character, what he does, he becomes a non-executive, but in the background tries to find a transaction for MRI. And in so doing, he finds Langpan. And Langpan is a little business in the Northwest province. And he goes and he tries to make it work. And eventually he gets, at some point in time, he gets what's called a competent person's report. Now in mining, Alec, you know what that is. A competent person's report is when someone competent comes along and says, look, I have a reserve, it's A. I have got to do B, which is put capital services, et cetera, and C will generate a profit. And he comes out with a valuation of around 850 million for Langpan to a billion. And he's very happy. Shortly thereafter, and he uses a very interesting company to do this, and the company is called, I'm just going to take my glasses off, forgive me. And the company that does this for him is called Bara, B-A-R-A. It's an interesting company that does this work for him. And he's very happy at the 850. He then comes along and does a fair and reasonable. And the fair and reasonable for Langpan is now done by a company by the name of Letsema. And Letsema comes up with a valuation. And here's where the crookedness starts and where the fraud and the criminality or malice starts. They get a valuation for 27.5 million rand. Just 27.5 million. At the time, Letsema says it's 27.5 million. He goes off to the board, interestingly enough, and he almost puts MRI, this company that he works for, almost goes into business rescue. And I'll explain the relevance shortly to you. And he reverses this with a bunch of shareholders for 550 million. Knowing that the fair and reasonable, and he prints the fair and reasonable at 27.5 million. And he comes along with a bunch of people, and you reverse it in to MRI, which later becomes Mantengo, for 550 million. That's almost 20 times its actual value. Fraud number one, or misrepresentation to the public number one. And he's working with a bunch of people. That's the Gamzee Family Trust, Disruption Capital, which is his, Collins Family Trust, Kiana Lilly. It's really me, Pty Limited. It's not me, guys. It's called It's Really Me, Pty Limited. Susan Lin, Pinotage Trustees. Dev Maharaj, who's his current attorney. And Vu Mining. And lastly, Andrew Pty Limited. And those people control 85% of this particular investment. And all they do is they come from Langpan, they're shareholders in Langpan, and they reverse this thing into a listed company. Not telling the public, or should I say telling the public, that the fair and reasonable is 27.5 million. But they did it for 550. That's the first misrepresentation to a normal guy in the street that ordinarily wouldn't go to the extent of doing all the homework that I've had to do because he's got onto my radar and I needed to understand what he's doing. So he goes along, he puts it in at 550 million. But interestingly enough, the competent person's report says something very interesting. Although they value it at 850 million, they say the assets are made up of chromium and platinum. And the platinum component of the asset represents about 550 or 600 million of the valuation. And here comes the second fraudulent behavior. He has no intention to mine the platinum. And I've been in the platinum industry for greater than 20 years. He does no work since 2022 on the platinum. No research. Absolutely nothing. He doesn't even do test work. He can't determine as to whether that can actually be processed economically out of the reserve. But knowing this, and until today, he hasn't produced 1 gram of PGMs. But knowing that he's not going to do anything with PGMs, he keeps quiet and he lists the asset at 550. What the competent person then says is that if you take the platinum component out of this, then the asset's only worth a maximum of 200 million. So you have Letsema saying 27.5 million, and you have a competent person saying 200 million. But he forges ahead at 550 million. And all the shareholders, Alec, in Langpan have now become shareholders in Lesco. He raises no money. goes to no banking institutions because they probably show him off from the door. And he's then in a position where he misleads the market. And guess what? He issues 130 odd million shares. And at what price sell it? 480. 550 million divided by 100 odd million shares. The share opens up. It opens up promptly on the 4th of April. It's supposed to open up at $4. On the day it opens, it closes at 1.26. He doesn't then pick up the phone and say, JSC, what's going on here? Because he knows he's the reason. He's misrepresenting. He's the fraudster that put this at 550 million on the market. So he doesn't make the call to the JSC. Someone's playing with my shares. And this is now 4th of April, 2023. A week later, Alec, 11th of April, his shares close at 90 cents. All the way from 4 rand. Because the market knows your position. Banks know. Big institutions know. No one's backing him. He's out there with these bunch of accomplices listing this company at 550. And why, I ask you? Because they want to create the innuendo to the market that in fact the share is worth 4 rand. Because everybody bought it 4 rand. So when it lists, you can also buy it 4 rand. And nobody's prepared to support it. As they go down the road in the entire period that this share has been trading, it's been trading at an average of 60 cents a share, which is where it probably is worth at the moment. And there's a calculation for that. But he comes along and he creates this narrative because he needs an excuse, as I mentioned, to explain to the public what he's actually doing. And I'll come later on to explain to you that as a game ranger, he's actually become a corporate poacher. And I'm going to explain to you what that corporate poacher means. Because he has a way of dealing with businesses. He's not a very long in business, pretty much. He's been in business since 2017 or thereabout. And what he does, he buys assets. He becomes a directly in a company before they're acquired. So he goes into the company before a transaction takes place. He becomes a non-executive director, example, in Memo Mining, which is a Langpan asset. Takes the information, makes people believe that because he's a CA, that he can be trusted. And then almost put bought Memo and the sister company to Memo, which owns Langpan, is called Memo Marketing. He put them in business rescue, takes the assets out and walks away with the assets. The second one was Mintengo, because Mintengo almost went into business rescue. And I think that was in September 2017, where he stopped going into business rescue and reversed this 550 million. But he was on Mintengo's board since 2017. And only did the transaction in 2020, 2022, and so on, in 2023. But he had all the insider information. So all times, this man understands how to be an insider, understands how to manipulate information, and lies to the public. And in my opinion, created a great fraud for 550 million on an asset, which was worth on his own version from Let's Swarm for 27.5 million. But that's not the reasons the company is doing badly. You know, I'm in the chrome mining business. I don't know if you know that, Alec. And I know chrome. I like to think I know a little bit about chrome. But the guy comes on your show and he says he's got a 317 million rand turnover. Just as an example. And you asked the question, but my profit was 350 million. I'm just an Indian guy that understands basic mathematics, you know. But I know if your turnover is 317 million and you're showing a 350 million profit, like, I don't know, maybe there's some Chinese accounting or whatever it is. But it didn't look right to me. And that's the first thing I looked at and thought to myself, no, I need to check this out more carefully. And the truth of the matter is, his operating profit, and he lied on your show, was only 4 million rand. And operating profit before interest and before taxation was 4 million rand. Sorry about that. Interestingly enough, his legal fees was 4 million rand for the year. Now, you're running a business and your operating profit is only 4 million before interest and before taxation. You've got an interest bill of 65 million rand. It's completely madness. That means you're running a loss ideally in the business. And last year's loss, just incidentally, was 27 million rand. It wasn't 350 million. I'll come to the 350 million and tell you why he is there. His legal fee is 4 million rand and a business making a operating profit of 4 million. He spends 100% of the operating profit on legal fees fighting. And I'll get to who's he fighting with and what he's talking about, the syndicate, as he calls it. His salary, as I said to you, was a game ranger. He probably earned 20 grand a month while he was a game ranger. And all of a sudden, it propels up, earning 5 million a year, with a co-CEO now earning 5 million. together they earn 10 million, and that's not even the entire board, just the two CEOs. Their market cap's about 200 million. That's 5% of the market cap is now the salaries of these two people. Unbelievable. It's crazy. And it is 2.5 times operating profit. You can say that maybe he's running the business in his mind. He thinks he's an angler, which is far from that, but his loss was 27 million. He currently holds about 30 million rand and he has debt of about 600 bars. So he's got a 5% cash to debt. This is why, and I'm giving you reasons why people are not happy to invest in this company. It's a risky company and run by risky people that have agendas. Operating profit is 1.25% of turnover. And that, by the way, is before any interest. As I said, operating profit. Market capital, 200 million. Issue says 317 million, which means they're trading at 63 cents, which is the right number to be trading at in Mouse Union. I want to take you to the legal issues. So while all of this is happening, Alec, on the 16th of February, he makes his allegation because he can see there's trouble in paradise and he can't explain his bad behavior and all of this fraud that he's bloody committing. And in the 9th of May, he makes a criminal complaint against, you won't believe who, the JSE, Leila Fourie, Zarina Bassa, Liberty Coal, members of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, and he also says, I'm involved with them. So the FSCA, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, all of these people are allegedly complicit with me, and I don't own a bloody share in his business, in order to bring this penny stock down. It's actually 2 pennies, sorry. I take that back because it's 50 cents. On the 22nd of May, he gets a 250 million rand damages claim from my partner, Danny. Doesn't mention that. On the 23rd of May, the FSCA issues a letter because he reports this. JSE says, let the FSCA look into this. And this is what they said. I'm sorry to take your time. It says the FSCA wishes to clarify that claims that there are no prima facie evidence of any bad work done. After a thorough investigation, the FSCA concluded that the transactions and orders identified by Mantengo are lawful security transactions in the ordinary course of business. That's a report from the FSCA from the 23rd of May. It's my business now to know his business. So when you look at why I'm doing all of this, it's a small little project for me now. I must say I enjoyed it, but what I discovered was rather sickening for me around how he's lying to the public. So along comes the FSCA letter. He then applies on the 10th of June for an urgent application to interdict the FSCA from publishing the entire report. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is that in that report, it says in detail, who is probably the selling party of his shares? And it's probably this company called GEMS, in my personal opinion, that would be selling the shares, or anybody that is affiliated to the company, but definitely not me or anybody directed to me or associated with me as such, or family to me or anything of that sort. Interestingly enough, he has my partner then served him on the 19th of August, and he gets a gagging order against him talking nonsense about him too. Because he creates the innuendo in the public domain that the JSE is working with myself, my partner, the FSCA, and a whole bunch of employees in the JSE to defraud him, which is completely ludicrous. But he then tries to bring an application. And I think that was on the 10th of October against the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. You may have heard of that. I think you asked him about that. And the scathing order says, and I'll just read you the judgment from the Johannesburg High Court. It says, in my view, not only does Mantengo not establish urgency, as there is nothing new that needs to be urgently disclosed in a sense analysis, it has not made full disclosure to the court, but has kept information from the court in an attempt to make a case out for urgency and alludes to share price manipulation without mentioning the Financial Sector Conduct Authority's report. So they don't take the court into their confidence and give them the FSCA's report. And they lie to the court and they get the scathing judgment against them not to publish this. In moving on, I think what's important for me to tell you further is that another crazy thing happens. Along the way, while misrepresenting to the public about this investment in the chrome industry, Langfang, and lying about the value of 550 million, they do another transaction. And the transaction is called Sublime Acquisitions, Now, this is something even me as a regular Indian guy, and I'm sorry to say that twice, I found more ridiculous, man. He says, it is a transaction that's based on a, and I think the word, I can't remember the word now. What was that word that he used? He said it was a special transaction or a discounted transaction or something he refers to in his financial statements. A bargain. Sorry, it was a bargain investment. Alec, listen to this. I think he thought he was at the Oriental Plaza. A bunch of Texans give this guy a 350 million rand business that's allegedly going to make 250 million a year and has 10 million cash in it. For how much? Alec, how much? Zero rand.
Hmm.
I see you smiling. I mean, that's a tall story.
That's a bargain.
Look, I need to know who these Texans are because me and you need to move out there very quickly into America and find these people. But the reality is he sells to the public that there's this company in the silicon carbide business, proper company, owns 2% of the world's silicon carbide. Cool story. This guy is a storyteller. And he says that it's a bargain, like at the Oriental Plaza, you know? Bargain only for today. It's worth 350 million, but you can have it for zero because you're the right guy. And he writes it like that. He says, we were identified as the right people. I don't know what criteria they use for that identification, but I wish I was part of it. That business is worth 350 million. And the profit he's referring to is a book entry. So he gets an asset for free. And then he knows it's not a trading. It's non-reoccurring. And even if he got it for free, he then puts himself in a position where he says he made 350 bar profit because he now records that free, whatever discount or rental plaza nonsense into there and says, I made 350 bar. So that's the explanation. I knew there was some nonsense to it, so I went into it. But interestingly enough, even if I did get something for free, whether from my father, my uncle, some Texans, there would be a donation tax somebody would have to pay, you know? 25%, no provision, probably around 70, 75 million, no provision in his financial statements, which worried me somewhat. Which brought me to the next point. And the next point was all the debt. The guy is running a business and he makes it sound bigger than it is. It's nothing. All the information that I have here on my table is public information. All of it. I took it from his financial reports and I've sent it to you, by the way, and it's on your computer. Because I want to talk from a fact perspective, not come up here and say Marty is a this or a that or running a bad criminal enterprise or a good one or whatever it is. All what I'm telling you is his financial statements. It's in the SA legal system. It's in documents that they've supplied to the JSE and so on that's public. So let's talk about his banking debt. He's got 600 million rands worth of debt. IDC, 51 bars. RWE, people I know in Germany, 68 million. Fed Group. And they rave about Fed Group because that's the only oaks that want to bank them, buddy. The deputy CEO says they do things differently. So I don't know what that means, but, and then he's got yellow goods for 100 bar. And that's just a few. But interestingly enough, the other reason people don't like investing, you've got 600 million, you've got 30 million in cash, and you do not have a way of telling me that if you can't reload all these debts, what will happen? So your liquidity could become easily a problem when you can't pay. Incidentally, the interest bill 60 million a year. So the trading profit before interest and before taxation of 4 million means that they can't service even their current debt. They need to borrow more money in order to service the debt position. You know, I just want to go back one point and tell you that when you talk about these things, I would like to talk about the shareholders because those people's names that I mentioned, they still control a lot of shares. They control more than 50%. So they'll keep this character, this loose cannon, in there as a director because they own more than 50.1% of the shares and they'll control the board. But that's in an attempt to perversely get people to invest money where there's absolutely no value, no cash flows. They're running theoretically and practically losses, which takes me to the point of the summary of their share issues. They started off with 150 million shares in 2023. When they reverse listed and committed that fraud. And this is just my opinion, and they're welcome to sue me because this is based on fact. You only can be sued for damages when you're not talking facts. And they then issue another 130 million shares along the way, or more, another 150 million because they have 300 odd million shares. All those people that have been issued shares, but have now bought into their nonsense and lies. Incentive shares, debt conversions, 46 million. Some people that were owed money had now to take this toilet paper and sell their shares. Burka Copper Mine, 20 million. Gem Facility, 48 million. And when you look at this, you start asking yourself an important question. And you start saying, who's actually wanting to manipulate this price? Because he's got a transaction called Gems. And Gems is a transaction apparently from, they're situated in the Bahamas. I don't know where that is, but it sounds quite exotic. And I know there's interesting structures there. But these guys gave them a 500 million rand share subscription. And obviously, every time there's a share price and they can disseminate the shares or issue the shares to them, they get money. So it would make sense that they issue these shares at the highest possible price so they don't water down their current shares. And currently, they've watered down their shares where those same group of individuals now, you'll realize that only 44 shareholders control still 86% of these shares. There's not one institution in there, not one bank, not one proper investor other than these bunch of criminals hubbing together, selling the market along stall. You know, when it comes back to the chrome, I want to tell you something even more interesting. That in the time when they listed their chrome business, they made some very big allegations about what they're going to do. And the PGMs thing is very important, Alec, because they've done zero. It's such an annoying thing when you go into the market and saying, I'm going to do PGMs and I'm going to do chrome. And then you do zero about the PGMs, almost like off the table. But it constitutes 70% of your competent person's report. But even in the business they run of chrome, from a trading perspective, they made 30 million rand and they did 100,000 tons of chromium. And they promised the market there'll be a 44 and 46% or 42 to 44% chrome. They only achieved the 36, 38%. And they said they're going to produce 200,000 tons and the capacity was 200,000 tons at 60%. But actually, they produce 100,000 tons. So everything these characters lied about and promised when they reverse listed, none of it is achieved. Zero. The only thing that really has become important for them is the remuneration. And I mean, to be paying these guys such a lot of money when the company doesn't make money is quite embarrassing. In fact, I just want to tell you, they make 300 rand a ton on the business without interest and without taxation, which is absolutely nothing. And they're just taking the money and put it in the bank. They could have probably given the shareholders a bit of dividend just out of interest. So that said, I passed the shareholder issues, which I wanted to address. The liabilities, as I said, 600 million rand, which is quite crazy. And then the net cash loss was 22.4 million. Lies saying it was 350 million. You know, what I see is I see a CA that effectively was a game ranger. But as I said to you, he worked in Londolozi and so on, and I'm sure he was really good at looking after animals, but he seems to be very bad at looking after shareholders and money. And I think it's something he needs to think seriously about, because I see something else very important. He became a director, and there's a certain way that he operates in this particular culture, corporate culture. He becomes a director in Memo, which is a company that bought Langpan. Prior to the transaction, he becomes a director in Mantengu. Prior to letting the transaction go in, he becomes a director in another company they bought called Burka. And all of these companies somehow end up at business rescue or close to business rescue. And then, incidentally, he goes and says in his report, if you remember, I'll never go near the Mochi Group. You remember that? In his interview with you. And then he wants to buy a minority interest in a small little business worth a billion or so in the northwestern province called Kilkin Platinum that the family owns. My son runs the South African operation there. There's a shareholder called Fikidutsky. You may have heard of this character. And that's a discussion point we'll have just now. And he put some money into this business and 242 million. And he wanted me to pay him 800 million back for the shares. And this is how the nexus arrived. We lost a case against him for off-person. I forget the English word. Forgive me. You may remember what it means. I think the English term of off-person is when someone blackmails you. And we refused to pay him 800 million for his 35.1%. And he got a hold of Müller. And he intends to make a Müller, Fricky, a 35% shareholder in his business. Now, Fricky himself is a whole criminal, and I don't want to expose him now because that's not the purpose of this. And I don't want to digress because that'll be quite unfair. And I'd rather stick to the facts of where we are at the moment. in essence, all the time, these guys, they come into your business, they become a director, whether it's independent or otherwise, take information, gain confidence of people and the auspices that I am a, what do they call the CA? I've got an MBA, you can trust me. And before you know it, your pants are down and you're having a whole very terrible experience that you can't think of. It's not happening to one of our companies. And I can assure you, we're not the type of guys that are going to stand there and roll over on this type of madness, because this is the way Müller operates. He has a certain modus operandi, gets in there, steals information, can't be trusted, and then lies to the public. So in essence, the reason, Alec, that nobody wants to buy these shares, and I've given you so many, I don't want to go in other than mention that even the assets he owns are worth nothing. The asset, which is the one in Langpan, has got a 6 or 7 year reserves. They're probable reserves. They're not even proven reserves, just out of interest. But when you go to a bank and you say to your bank, listen, I will need some money, or do you want to invest with me? They'll say, but what have you got that's provable? You've got probable reserves, which is probably not bad, but it's really not good. It doesn't give anybody comfort. And he's got also indicated and inferred reserves, which means absolutely nothing. And then they've got the Zerust operation, which is not even transferred to them, but apparently running at also not a significant profit in itself. So in essence, guys, the word out there for me, for the public, is to be careful about investing in Mantengo, particularly when he's running it, because it's a company sham. There's certainly no value in it. I'll load the documents up onto my website. I want people to feel free to go there and check out what I'm saying. I'll send them to you. You can have a look at them. And I'd like to also caution the banks that are recklessly lending to this character. He sells them a lot of stories. There's a lot of people out here that are lending him money, including the IDC and so on, selling them a whole hogwash about things that are never going to happen. He has not been able to demonstrate that in the short term, currently, his current assets are enough to settle his current liabilities. Now, that puts you in a situation of illiquidity with 30 million and 600 bar there. And therefore, people are scared to invest in this. And I think big corporates know the story about Müller, but nobody's had the balls to come along and say, you know what? This is a criminal. I'm picking my hand up and this is what he does. Incidentally, he's at no point shown a shred of evidence. And I'm going to close up on that point of me, any of my family owning a share in this business, which made me so annoyed because I have no interest in this company. You have investments of hundreds of millions of rands in this exchange, including other stock exchanges. You wouldn't want to be involved in a company that's got a market cap of 100 or 200 million with these type of risks run by these type of criminals. I don't know if there's any more questions you may have because you look shocked and very quiet.
Thank you. You've actually given an advocate's argument here. But let's just go back to the basics here. To me, it sounds a little bit like what's going on with Mkhwanazi and crime intelligence and the slush funds. And you got one side, then you got another side. But getting back to what he's said on BizNews TV, which is you run a criminal enterprise. Surely that's seriously enough to sue the guy or to sue his company, or are you doing that? What are you going to do about that?
You know, Alec, how do you sue a guy that owns 8 or 9% of a penny stock company and has got maybe 15 bars to his name? What will I do with him? And you're going to get a lot of people that say stupid things. And the reality is, when you do successful things or when you do important things in life, you then find yourself with a number of people that absolutely love you and adore you and look at what you're doing and are inspired by it. But then you get a couple of guys that just hate you for the reason of hating. He hasn't given a shred of evidence to suggest any of that. But he comes along because he wants to create a diversion. He wants to say Marty's bad and he's messing up my shares and this is the reason I'm doing bad. I mean, what was the other motivation to do it? Working with Fricky? I don't know. I've done nothing to the guy. I've just now, unfortunately, undressed him to the public insofar as what the position is. And it's factual. All of what I said is factual. It's not him coming on board saying, you know, Marty's playing with my shares. I mean, he came on your show, given us nothing, shown nothing to anybody. FSCA said nobody's done anything wrong. JSC has said nobody's done anything wrong. Nobody believes his story. In fact, he's irrelevant. But the reason he picks with guys like us is because he wants to be relevant. He wants to be famous. And I'm scared that he'll become infamous with this amount of information in the public domain that he needs to now actually go and explain specifically.
Well, I suppose the question really has to be, what's his motive? Because if you've got so much to hide, why do you go public with it?
Who is
him, from Miller's point of view, everything that you've laid out today is you've laid out a lot of dirty washing from his company, Mantengu, etc. Now that he's going at you, surely he would anticipate that there would be some kickback.
You know, as I keep on telling, he's a game manager. He's not a strategist. And that's how he gets to where he needs to be. You know, when a guy earns 20 grand a month and then starts earning 5 million, he thinks he's God. And I think he hasn't thought the process very carefully too. At this stage, I'm not interested to sue because I don't think I could recover anything. But I have reported a criminal injury case against him, which I hope will go somewhere. Maybe Mr. Makonazi can help me with that. Or someone in the police force, if they ever survive, can assist us with that. But there's nothing more I can do other than inform the public of the situation. And I'd be very interested to see. I'm waiting with bated breath for his interim reports to come out now. And I think they kind of due shortly. So you'll be in a position to have to come and explain this nonsense and how he's lied his way since 2022 or 23 into Mantengu. And they're difficult answers because it's clear-cut misrepresentation to shareholders. I mean, 27.5 million to 550 million. It's a big jump, eh? You know, it's a 2000% jump on value. And he still hasn't got a cash flow, still not declaring dividends, never intends to declare dividends, chalking up a huge amount for debt all the time in order to pay his interest. He's taking from Peter to pay Paul, basically. And that's what it is, you know?
And the charges that he's laid with, the Hawks against you and Paul O'Sullivan?
It's not only against me, it's against the JSE, I think, as well, and against other people that he says are part of this enterprise. And I think that's once again an opportunity to give the public legs to lie to them about these issues. I understand he has laid some charges. Nothing can ever come out of it. As I said, I've never been involved in him. He lays conspiracy theories around other investments I've had in a company called Rebosis. And I used to be quite a significant shareholder in South Africa's biggest black REIT. And it was at some stage an 18 billion rand business listed. And unfortunately, went into business rescue. I tried to save it as best I could. We thought of many different ideas. And him and Ficky Litsky went along down there to try and create the impression that I had done something wrong. And that's in order so that he can push me into making a settlement with him. But now that you're talking about Ficky Litsky and about this guy, I just want to tell you what they may be looking as a new potential crime syndicate member, Ficky Litsky into Mantengu. This guy in 2012 crashed a helicopter and burned and buried it while he was flying near Rhino Farms, etc. Second helicopter, he buried in Zimbabwe, presumably apparently moving gold, drugs, and weaponry. Advocate Salir's incident in the 23rd of May 2014, where I'm given to understand that somehow Salir's was injected because an advocate on his way to court, you may have heard of that story. That's why they always talk about wearing this pants that have got a bit of steel in them when they go and do work for guys like Witsky. And then suing EPSA, and saying EPSA are fraudsters and took a mall away from me. But that's nothing. In addition to that, he has actually a criminal record and a ruptured reputation that's based on arrests and sentences. Some sexual conduct offenses that he's had in 2004 in Groblersdal, in Middelburg and Mpumalanga. He was soliciting, I think it was hookers, in Middelburg and Mpumalanga. He was carrying the charge was the act regulating explosive found in possession of this guy. And lastly, he was charged in Zimbabwe for aviation and immigration regulations, sentenced to 84 months in prison, 42 months suspended for 5 years. So this is a guy that found himself putting minority stake in our business. And you may ask yourself, like, why am I involved in this criminal myself? I can see it in your face. I know Ficky for a long time, you know, and I know him to be quite a scoundrel. But when I came back from Germany, I really sat with him and I thought for a moment, the guy has actually come back and he's actually changed a lot. And at that stage, that business needed some money, fairly so. We allowed him to invest 242 million. And then he started to become quite interesting, this character. He started to start taping everybody's conversations, including his family, and doing all sorts of mad things. And we would make a complete idiot of him. And we would allow him to tape our conversations and then talk nonsense. For example, I borrowed him once a vehicle of mine, and he went home and he was taping me, and it had this thing called lane assist. I don't know if you know what that is. And he came back, you know, lane assist is this thing in a Mercedes-Benz or BMW. If you go close, you remember, then it pulls you. He said I was trying to kill him because the car was going to the left all the time. And he taped me that the lane assist was done this way so that I could have him killed. He's a complete nutter, you know. He locks himself in the room at night because he has visions from God and all sorts of nonsense. But the bottom line is that could be one of the shareholders of Mkengo going forward, because Miller is actually his alter ego. He's Fricky's alter ego, because he doesn't have the money to buy those shares. He's lying to the public that he has the ability to buy even a 35% little stake in a business of ours that's in the platinum business. All that he's actually doing is irritating everybody. And you know, if I had to throw a rock at every single person or every single process along the way to success, I'd be waiting a very long time to get to where I need to. But I think it was important. And the only reason I wanted an opportunity to explain myself was because I can see this level of madness that's going on. And it would be a bloody shame if an investor, a mama, papa, a little investor out there wanting to make a bit of money and sold a lot of hogwash and then finding themselves losing their money. Be cautious. I also would like to just reiterate the banks, they need to be ultra cautious about this, because this, in my opinion, smacks of Marcus Huerster. Marcus Huerster was a CA, remember? This is a CA. They use this divine knowledge of having financial knowledge and the ability to write MBAs and all of this to dupe people into believing the rubbish and nonsense. And look at where Marcus Huerster ended up, buddy. Billions and billions and billions of rands wasted and stolen. Let's not find ourselves supporting a lunatic that's going to do the same thing. I don't know if there's anything else. I know we had an hour, but geez, I'm tired of talking.
Yeah, I guess just one last thing. By responding in the way that you have, and you've spent a lot of time, you've invested a lot of energy in putting this all together to have your right of reply to Mike Miller. But aren't you now, given your reputation, as you said earlier, some people love you, some people don't, that you are now going to have things you're not proud of that are going to be pushed into the public domain?
I think that's not possible, because I know that Mike and Fricky went to Amabungani again, and I know that they sent me lots of questions. But unfortunately for them, those are Fricky Lisky nonsense and madness. And all that has to be said about me has already been said. You'll remember those Amabungani characters 2 years ago. They printed everything episode upon episode upon episode. And what did it result in? Do you know what it resulted in, Alec? The guy that was apparently the whistleblower is now charged for theft. That they don't report. He's now facing criminal charges at the moment in Johannesburg's, Randburg's Magistrates Court. And I believe he's on his second or third appearance for that. But they keep quiet about that now because nothing happened. And if there's, I don't know what else they could air on me, and that could be great. If they do, that's fine. I'm a private company, Alec. I'm not a public company. I'm not taking money from the public. I'm not abusing people's trust. I'm not stealing from the public. I'm not misleading young investors. And I'm not making a mockery out of the fraternity of the JSC, etc. You know, this reminds me of a saying my grandfather used to tell me a lot. And he used to say, and in this case, if you take a clown to a JSC-listed company becomes a bloody circus. And this is what exactly is. Only he's been very good and crafty about hiding all of this rubbish that he has. But he has a lot of explaining to do. And no matter how much nonsense he talks about me, it doesn't cover up the problems that have now been exposed, unfortunately.
So Sinead Motty is the SADC head of the Motty family business. And I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.